This is a Hoff Studios podcast.
Hi, I'm your host, Erica Pulsinelli, and welcome to Evolve by Erica, the podcast, where we talk all things spirituality, ascension, health, wellness, and beyond. I'm so excited that you are here. Come on in. Hi guys, I am excited to introduce you to the guest that's coming on the podcast today. Her name is Maddie Elberger, and she is a DBT therapist. And we will get into the structure and the full definition of what DBT therapy is, but it is a powerful form of therapy that helps people who are in really intense moments and assist them through not making a decision that could possibly make their situation worse, but diffusing it with different strategies and being able to truly tap into mindfulness through this type of therapy. So it was really fun talking to her because we really connected the spirituality and the beliefs that I have around healing and growing and evolving to the work that she does clinically. And she was just able to frame a lot. And most importantly, I think that she gave so many useful and helpful tools that we can all take and use in our life, whether we're going through something really big or maybe something minor. I know I walked away with my list of 10 things that I'm going to have on hand when I want to implement this type of structure to help me realign to the highest version of myself. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. And at the end of it, if you feel guided to share this with someone who could use it, please feel free. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope you enjoy the episode. I'm like, we can talk forever, so we just have to start rolling. Tell me everything.
Okay, so I consider myself like a fake it girl. Like, I'm an it girl that nobody knows, so I'm just an it girl to myself.
That's amazing.
But like, I try to not go to places that like everyone goes. I try to go to like cooler, chicer places. You need to go if you're coming into the city. You need to go to Stale Studios. It's like the new Elizabeth Endress goes there.
I love her, and yeah. I take any recommendation she
so
puts out there.
I actually saw Stale from her like months ago, and then I got in with the owner, Elizabeth, who's like the chicest, coolest girl in the world. And I'm telling you right now, like, I don't put anything on my face. Like, I put no makeup on. Like, this is my face. They do facial massage. They do this like really cool, intense like LED light that I obviously had to buy for $2,000.
Oh my goodness, I understand.
No, like, it's, I'm telling you, go there and like, you can DM Elizabeth and be like, I'm Maddie's friend. I just recorded with her. Like, she'll get you in. And then, like, it's literally the best. Stale Studios.
Okay. It's like, they'll rub my face, I will be there.
No, they will literally, like, it's like, I walk out and I'm like, I didn't even realize I could be this pretty.
I love it. No, it's, and it's so relaxing and it just feels so good.
Perfection.
Wow.
And, like, all their products are, like, really niche and, like, fairly clean. Not totally clean, but, like, yeah. They use like these like French brands, like it's like there's like three product brands that are used there. Wow. Like their like serums are made from like barley. I don't fucking know, but it's like you have to go. I'm telling you right now, like life changing.
Okay. I will, and it's 10 minutes from here.
Yeah, it's on. It's, you know where Altro Paradiso is, like on the like basically like on the edge of West Soho and Tribeca.
Okay,
it's literally perfect from my apartment, a 20-minute walk. And okay. So from here, a 10-minute walk.
Amazing.
Legitimately, like you need to go.
I also like the Well. Have you gone to the Well?
I love the Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christina there is my favorite. Well, she's I have tried other people, but she's like the best. And her facial massage is amazing. And as she's doing it, she's like, I'm going to give you cheeks.
You like, have like a skinny face. Like, you're lucky. You have like good bone structure.
No, I want a fuller face. I'm like, I want to gain weight so my face is fuller because it'll help me look young.
I mean, by the way, like, yes, like I get that 100%. Like this like keeps me looking like 21, but like the rest of my face, it's like then I have these lines and it's like, what is going on here? But
I'm just doing the facial massage.
Do it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so we're going to get into it. We can't stop talking already. I'm so excited that you're here.
I'm really thrilled.
I'm so grateful for what you do in the world. Mental health is such an important topic to me for so many reasons. I've had addiction in my very close relationship, my family. I struggled with anxiety most of my life. Specifically health anxiety, and that's what has led me to this whole practice and what I share, and to connect with you, where you can really take all of your clinical experience and all of the amazing experience you have that I'd like you to talk about and share, and talk about mindfulness from your standpoint and how you see it and all the amazing things that you do with your patients. I think everyone that's listening can take away, no matter what they're struggling with, whether it's like a little trauma, big T trauma, or a smaller anxiety or a greater anxiety, I think you present so many amazing strategies and techniques that we can just have in our pocket. And I know there's a lot that you've shared about on other podcasts that I've listened to that I've taken, and I'm like, ooh, now I understand a deeper meaning of why this is helpful. So I'm so excited to introduce you to this community.
I'm so happy. And I have to tell you, like, the thing that really floors me about the social media thing is I sort of accidentally fell into this, like, semi as a joke with friends, and then I ended up on podcasts, and now I'm like, okay, like, I'm gonna do this. It's like unbelievable how many people reach out to me and, you know, like, and they're like, this was so helpful, or could you explain more about that? It's just such an opportunity. So I'm really grateful and appreciative of the opportunity to speak on anyone's podcast, because that means there's greater reach about opportunities and options and ways to get better. Yeah. And that's like really huge.
It is. It really is. So tell us a little bit about yourself. A quick little intro going into anything that you feel guided to.
Fabulous. So I'm a DBT, CBT therapist. I have a private practice in downtown Manhattan called Downtown Behavioral Wellness. And the reason that I say I'm a DBT and a CBT therapist is because dialectical behavior therapy, which is really my bread and butter, provides an opportunity for people to be able to think more flexibly, which is very much so in line with mindfulness, to be able to have tools to utilize or choose to not utilize. And again, it's really grounded in mindfulness. And so that's like really, I consider myself like the DBT girl, because I live my life that way. That's how I treat. And so if you're coming to me, even if you don't like fit the exact DBT bill, you're getting DBT. I guess it's like so funny that I just jumped into that, because that's not really about me. I live in New York City, single, if anyone wants to set me up. Like,
I love it. I love that.
I went to Columbia. No, by the way, like, if you know anyone, okay. Very available.
Okay, that's in my mind, and I'll hold it there.
Thank you so much. Yeah. yeah, it's so hard for me to introduce myself. I've taught at Columbia. I've taught at NYU. I'm expanding my practice for the first time, which is really exciting. I'm hiring some associate therapists, which is really great. I love to teach. I love to mentor. And I just love what I do. It's like a real, real pleasure to do what I do.
I love that. And when you love what you do, you just show up with so much excitement and passion, and everyone that you work with will feel that.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. It doesn't mean I don't get tired, you know, like, of course, and I'm sure you can experience that too. Like, there's fatigue that goes on, especially like when you put your whole self into your work and dialectically speaking at the same time. Like, I never wake up and I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this right now. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I'm like, I'd like to sleep an extra hour, or how do I need to rearrange my stuff so that I can actually feel more rested? I'm always like thrilled and interested to show up to work, always.
When did you know you wanted to get into this?
So, this is like kind of a, I'm a very intentional person, and sometimes I find myself like falling into things and then becoming intentional. So it's kind of like the universe, you know what I mean? In undergrad, I was like, I'm going to be an attorney. And then I like walked into like one poli sci class and I was like, hey, this is no, not for me. And I like got a 5 on the AP. And so I was like, okay, I'll take an upper level psych class. And I just like, freshman year, fall, never looked back. I was like, oh, this just makes so much sense to me. This really speaks to me. And throughout undergraduate and graduate school, I was mostly child and family focused and mostly trauma focused. And of course, understanding anything about big emotions, emotion dysregulation, suicidality, like there's so much trauma underneath that. And so when I graduated, somebody was like, I think you'd really be great at dialectical behavior therapy. And so I
was that a teacher or a mentor?
It was a friend. It was like a friend of a friend of a friend's husband, who was also a psychologist, And I loved the trauma work. I loved it. I worked at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. It was incredible. It was like the saddest thing I've ever done in my life, at the most, like, you know, like, it was incredible. And I still do a lot of trauma work, but I kind of, someone was like, your personality is really well suited for DBT. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but like, okay. So I applied to this job after I finished like all my postgraduate training. And I ended up at a practice in Long Island for 7 years where I had my mentors. I like really grew as a therapist, that I really feel so well suited to DBT. And I feel like it really is a self-selecting treatment for clinicians, because it asks for a lot of like radical genuineness and authenticity and a lot of availability. And so it's not for everyone, and that's okay. Yeah. And the people that it's for, it's like, you can never leave. Mm. So I fell into it, and I've never looked back in the 9 years that I've been out of school. Wow.
Can you tell us exactly what it is and also compare it to CBT?
1,000%. I could do this in my sleep. So dialectical behavior therapy is a cognitive behaviorally based treatment. The difference between CBT and DBT is that CBT is what we call a big C, little B treatment, and DBT is a big B, little C treatment. What that means is, in CBT, you like the change leads with dealing with your thoughts, changing your thoughts, right? Or finding evidence for your thoughts. And that's great for a lot of different things. CBT is amazing, and there's many, many great CBT treatments that help people. If you are a person who is biologically predisposed to a very, very extreme amount of emotion dysregulation, where you just feel like your emotions go 0 to 100, being able to change your thoughts becomes nearly impossible. Because when you get really emotionally dysregulated, you become cognitively dysregulated. It's like you can't think straight. That's why, like, in mindfulness, we pause before we do stuff. Because when you're feeling a lot of things, your brain is like on fire, right? And so DBT leads with behavior change, because in theory, behavior change is actually more attainable. It's really, really hard, and it's more attainable, and therefore your thoughts and emotions will follow. But when you're sitting there and you're in CBT, and so many people go through really good therapists, but they're like, I can't get better. Like, what is wrong with me? And it's a really shame-inducing process. It just means that, like, they need a more behavioral treatment.
I can connect to that from my own personal experience, in the way that I used to go into these loops, and it would just be an anxious loop, and it would continue and continue, and it would be hard to think myself out of that loop.
Exactly.
Eventually, I was able to use what I would do, and maybe there is a clinical term for it, you can tell me, but I would replace it with the positive thought. Okay. Like, if I was thinking something negative, I would replace it with positive and be like, if I'm going to waste my time worrying, I'm going to waste my time like daydreaming instead and putting it on this positive current rather than the negative one. So eventually I was able to do that after I started meditating.
Right.
But my meditation or my workout or my walk outside is more of a, tell me if I'm understanding this correctly, a behavior that got me out of the loop.
Correct.
And helped to redirect my energy.
1,001%.
And then I was able to get my thoughts behind where I wanted them to go.
Exactly. That is, you said that exactly correctly. And I'll start like by pointing out that you said I couldn't think myself out of something.
Yeah.
And I say that all the time. You can't think yourself out of feeling something. Mm. It's like, and like, you become stuck, particularly with anxiety or like OCD, which is essentially anxiety, or, you know, like shame thoughts. It's like you get stuck trying to understand where they're coming from, and you get stuck trying to understand like why you still feel them. And neither of those thought processes are going to help you feel better, because they're just keeping you entrenched in that circle. Mm-hmm. So while it would be nice to understand in that moment, like, why am I like this? What is actually more effective is, how do I get out of this so that I can come back to a place where I can examine it? Like, I can examine my thoughts. I can watch them. I can see what triggers them. You can't do that unless you are able to shift.
Yes.
And the loop is hell. I've also been there. So yes, behaviorism is the way to go. It's the reset.
So if someone is in a negative loop, or they have this one thing that they continuously do, like in my mind, I'm thinking of a few different situations, possibly using drugs or alcohol or looking for food, to possibly binge in order to, I don't know, whatever it is.
Regulate.
What are some things or what are some practices that you've used with your patients that you recommend in those moments?
Sure. And I'll expand on that, right? Something that I talk about a lot for myself is like sending an impulsive text to like a guy I'm dating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything that kind of you're looking. And so it's like, and I say that because even if it's not somebody who struggles with binge eating or drug use, it's like whatever you're doing in that moment, that's that like automatic reaction to get rid of the discomfort.
Yeah.
Right. And in theory, you can do whatever you want. But you want to be able to have choice. You don't want things to be automatic. Right. And so the first step, so we have different sets of skills in DBT to address different things that happen when you get emotionally dysregulated. And one of the biggest things that I talk about with people in the beginning of treatment on my Instagram is something called distress tolerance. And distress tolerance is actually an acceptance-based set of skills because in that moment, we are not trying to change the scenario. We are trying to put ourselves in a different place to experience that scenario. Mm-hmm. So we're not actually changing anything. We're doing something different for ourselves before we can change the scenario. And the thing about DBT that, I mean, I'm going to say this 800 times, like I really do think it's the best treatment in the world, and like I'm not being sponsored by like by Behavior Tech, you know, like the company that distributes it, but like there's so many options. So for distress tolerance, the whole goal there is how do I get through this situation? I might not feel better, but how do I not make it worse? Right? So making it worse would be acting on the impulse, using, sending the text that you didn't think twice about, you know, grabbing the food that you weren't even hungry for, whatever it might be, like impulse shopping. Again, like that's objectively, none of these things are objectively bad except for using drugs if you're an addict, but like they become problematic when they are problematic for you. And I think that comes from that automatic reaction. And so the beautiful thing about DBT is we have sets and sets and sets of skills, and people put together their own like little list. I make a list with every single one of my patients, 10 things you can do for at least 5 minutes before
five
you
minutes
act.
Each?
Yes.
Okay.
Before you act on that urge.
So an hour, almost an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if you can delay an urge for 15 minutes, you can keep delaying that urge.
Yeah.
Like, and it's really about, again, distress tolerance. You're not, it's not like I'm going to feel good after this, that I didn't make it worse for myself. I didn't put myself in a situation where I'm going to feel shame after this, or I'm going to feel more anxious after this, right? And it's building up that, like, I don't like the word armor, but it's building up that capacity to, like, sit in that discomfort without immediately running away from it. And so,
or even like moving the discomfort though,
exactly.
Because I'm just imagining myself in the moments where I feel anxious. If I go out for a walk to the beach, I feel completely different after that. And that may not even be 50 minutes.
Nope.
And it's something that helped to transmute that energy.
That's exactly it. It's how can you move? How can you mindfully do something else? Right.
Yeah.
Because we know like, objectively, your brain can't do two things at once. Multitasking is fake. it's bullshit. Like multitasking, it's just task switching, and that's why we end up messing things up or multitasking too frequently. But your brain can't do something twice. And so if you can start to train yourself to shift your attention and your focus to basically anything else, and I have my go-tos that if you can shift your attention, you can go on that walk for 10 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, and you're mindful on that walk. You're paying attention to, you know, maybe you're describing what's around you. Maybe you're listening to the ocean. Maybe you're listening to a podcast because you need a little bit of something extra when you're on that walk to keep you present. You're not thinking about the thing that's distressing you. And the more you think about the thing that's distressing you, the more likely you are to act impulsively. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And it's so true about the reactivity and how easy it is to go to something that's going to amplify the problem or the distress when we can diffuse it by doing something that could bring us into a state of mindfulness and then have so much more clarity around it.
Exactly. And that's the goal. You can't fix a problem when you're at 100, you know? Like you can't, if there's already a nuclear leak, like you have to then do like, you know, backup cleaning.
Yes.
We can prevent the nuclear leak. That just means that things are going to be hard, but then we can actually like fix the problem. We can like plug the pipe up or whatever.
There's this meditation that I practice and teach. It's for acting instead of reacting. Mm-hmm. And it's just like speaking to these moments mm-hmm. too, where it's a really powerful breath. You breathe in for 3 seconds, 3 to 4 seconds. Through the lips, you hold it for 3 to 4 seconds, and then you cannon fire the breath out, like, and it starts to burn up that mm-hmm. reactivity.
Yep.
So that's one thing that would be on my list.
That's perfect.
Walking yep. to the beach would be on my list. Doing maybe Pilates, a meditation, of course, like the act or react. What are some things that either are on your list or that you recommend to patients?
Sure. So anything we can do that's physiological, I find to be just a great kind of intro into how do I start to shift my attention, because when you're using your body, you're burning emotional energy. Mm. Like, it truly is burning energy. My actual favorite thing is something in DBT that we call the tip skill. And it's like, you've seen it on social media, people talking about it in different ways, like taking an ice bath in your face.
Yes.
So essentially.
Wait, I did a TikTok on that.
Yeah.
And I got two or three million views on it. My highest view TikTok.
Because, honestly,
it
that makes me
so happy.
It just dunked my face. Like, literally, that makes me so happy. And, like, you probably didn't even realize or understand the science behind it.
Even want to post it. Well, I was talking to someone who was helping me with TikTok, and she's like, I'm going to post this today. And I was going to be like, honestly, that's, like, not even a good video. And then that's LOL. Always how it happens.
Literally. And, like, here you are doing DBT.
So
you
tell
didn't even
us.
Realize.
Tell us all about it.
I will. It's, like, my favorite thing to talk about. If I get too science-y, just let me
no,
know.
No, go so there.
I'm, like, I'm a little nerdy, but, you know.
I love that.
So basically, the goal for high intensity moments, so like a panic attack, whatever it is, just like high intensity, is we want to re-regulate our nervous system.
Yeah.
We want to take our nervous system from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic nervous system. Sympathetic is fight or flight. Parasympathetic is rest and digest. That's what slows our heart rate down, okay? And so this ice bath thing is great. In DBT, again, we call it the tip skill. It's like the temperature skill. And what it does is it activates something called our dive reflex. And so when our body is submerged in really, really, really cold water, it kind of tricks our brain into thinking that we're losing oxygen mm-hmm. and that we're, like, drowning. It's kind of dark, but, like, it's not intended
and it's,
to.
And it's, like, a lot on the body. You, yep. like, want to breathe in really quickly.
Exactly. And so what happens to your brain, and specifically your face, and it's this part of your face, like your sinuses, what happens to your brain is your brain automatically goes into rest and digest, because it's like, oh my God, something's happening to me, I need to conserve oxygen. Hmm. But instead of, oh my God, something's happening to me, this is threatening, it's, oh my God, something's happening to me, I need to slow myself down. And so if you dunk your face, it doesn't have to be ice water, it can be. The idea is that you want it to be super, super, super cold. Mm-hmm. You need to hold your breath. And you generally need to do it a few times, I would say, if you're really dysregulated. You will naturally, literally experience your heart decreasing. So you can look at your Apple Watch, you can look at your Oura Ring, and you can actually see that your heart rate will decrease for about 15 to 20 minutes without having to do anything else but stick your face in ice water. And I love that skill. I say to people all the time, like, try it even if you're not dysregulated, just so that you can, like, regardless, it's going to do something yeah. to your body. And, like, I love that skill, because if we're in a place where we're really struggling with something, it's really hard to be willing to go do something else.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to say, I'm going to stick my – well, it is, but sticking your face in water and automatically feeling a little bit more calm makes it so much easier to then take the next step into whatever other mindful activity you need to do to delay – you're acting on the urge.
Mm.
So we love the ice bath. It's a vibe. Another thing that I'm really into is connecting with other people. And it has yeah. to be intentional connection, right? And so in DBT, we always encourage people to get validation from other people. Here's the thing. Like, in a moment of super high distress, if you call someone up and you vent, you're gonna make yourself feel worse, because you're talking about the thing that's making you upset. And if your goal is, I need to mindfully redirect right now, what you can do is call someone up and ask them to talk to you. Like, and that's what I'll do. I have, like, you know, my sister and, like, a couple of my best friends, and they know, like, I'll call them at times and I'll be like, I just need you to talk at me about something, and I'm just gonna listen. I can't talk about it right now. Like, I'm having a moment, I need a distraction. Obviously, we'll talk about it later. It's really intentional for me. I'm sitting there and I'm connecting with them. I'm asking somebody else about how their day is. I'm asking, you know, what was you know, my two best friends have babies, like send me pictures, like put them on the FaceTime. You know what I mean? It's really anything to pull yourself out of that loop. And I think human connection is just like the whole, like it, you know, yeah. Like that is life. So I always say connect with a friend and be mindful that you're not connecting over what's dysregulating you at the moment. Mm. And you can always go back to that when you don't feel like at 100, you know, when right. you're back down to 60 or 50, sure, yeah. talk about it. Like, and that makes sense. You want to talk about it, but not when we're like at 100, because it's just gonna activate us more. I also think that like, I'm a big take a note in your phone. You can either like journal, take a note in your phone, just get it out of your head. Put it out there and leave it there. You can revisit it in an hour. Decide what you want to do with it, right? You really want to send that text? Revisit it in an hour.
Yeah.
And if you really feel like you want to send it then, okay, then we'll workshop it. Then right. my patients will call me and we'll go through it, and that's fine. But, you know, getting something out of your head, I think also there's something called, of course, now I can't remember the stupid acronym. There's this concept of contributing, like doing something nice for other people. So when you're in a high distress moment, like if you live in an apartment building, can you like, you know, whip up a little batch of cookies for your doorman and your porters, right? That's going to actually get you, that's an activity. You have to pay attention to it, because if you don't, you're going to make the cookies disgusting. Mm-hmm. And then you're giving it to other people. You're actually taking yourself outside of your moment and focusing on something else. If you haven't spoken to a grandparent in a while or a sibling, call them. And be like, hey, what's up? How are you? You know what I mean? And like this idea of, like I said, contributing, doing something with the intention of making somebody else feel good. Yeah. That's another really, really great thing you can do. And honestly, like any sort of random distraction, I tell people, find a podcast that's not going to be triggering. So if it, you know, if you're struggling with food stuff, don't listen to a food related podcast yeah. in that moment. If you're struggling with relationship stuff, like don't listen to something about relationships, but find a podcast and take notes on it. As if you're being tested, because you have to pay that much attention to it. Mm. So you can really notice when your mind's getting pulled and how when you bring it back. And so it's really anything could be a mindfulness, and it's just about finding things that you are willing to do that are easily accessible to you, that you can bring on the go, and keeping it all on your phone.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I love them. Absolutely makes sense. I think my biggest question is, how does someone build the muscle to go to their list rather than give in to their distress?
Well, and I think that's the core of what mindfulness is.
Yes.
You're literally speaking to, and you know that. Like the core of what mindfulness is how do we build that muscle?
Yes.
And you build that muscle through the pause and through the awareness. Mm-hmm. So when you're first starting to change a behavior, or like when you're first starting to build a new habit, the expectation that you're going to do it easily and every single time will throw you off of your goal and push you away from it 10 out of 10 times. Yeah. And I'm sure you've experienced that. I've experienced it. Like, there needs to be a system. Mm-hmm. You need to be intentional. And so what I say to people is, like, I speak a lot from my own experience, and that's something great about DBT is that we are really genuine. It's like a real, real relationship. Because again, we're asking our patients to do really, really hard things, like things that they've been doing their whole life. And I'm like, do it differently, right? You want to do it differently. This is hurting you. It's through repetition, and it's through support, and it's through intentionality. So for example, if you know you're coming into a situation that's going to be hard for you, that's going to trigger, name your emotion, shame, guilt, anxiety, sadness, whatever it is that you get dysregulated and overwhelmed by, then you want to plan ahead for that. You want to know, okay, 15 minutes in, I'm going to go into the bathroom, or I'm going to go take some ice, and I'm going to just squeeze some ice in my hands. Like, I keep my hands down by my side. No one's going to be able to see it, right? And then, you know, I'm going to check in with my therapist. We'll have a call 30 minutes into this event, yeah. right? If you start to notice X, Y, and Z urge, can you step outside and call someone and ask for a distraction? Can you, you know what I mean? It's building intentionality around this so that you're getting muscle memory built, mm-hmm. so that when you're in the thick of it in the woods, if you will, like in the wild, it's you can pull on it more easily. You yeah. can't pull on something that you've never practiced. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of intentionality. And the other beautiful thing about DBT that I love is that we are available to our patients. Like, it is part of the treatment. Every single one of my patients has my cell phone number. Every single one of my patients knows that I'm available 24 hours a day. Wow. that's like the traditional model. Not everyone has to be available 24 hours a day to be a DBT therapist, but I'm available. I'm available for a 10 or 15 minute call. If you know that you're struggling with something and you need to figure out how to do something differently, call me. Yeah. I'd always rather someone call than not call and do the thing, because then I can't help them. It's already done. Yeah. But that's the idea, that you're in therapy once a week and DBT it's twice a week. Like, and then you're supposed to know how to do stuff. How do you build this muscle? You know that you have support around you that can help you, mm-hmm. like can force you into that muscle in those moments.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a huge catalyst for change.
Totally. I think having the accountability, you being their accountability.
Totally.
At first is a huge help in totally. Implementing that for themselves. I also was thinking, as you were sharing that, sometimes it takes, like, you really need to be in a place of I want to change. And I think in those moments, you have to think, like, okay, how I respond right now is either going to keep me where mm-hmm. I've been,
mm-hmm.
or I need to find the strength to move towards where I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that looks like rock bottom, which looks different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But in those moments, like, that desire really needs to be there to change.
It's like the desire to change or the desire to not experience the thing that you yeah. keep experiencing. Because yeah. for some people, change seems so, like, you know, unattainable. But the idea of, like, I just can't feel like this anymore. That's why, like, DBT traditionally was created for people with borderline personality disorder. And borderline personality disorder is a psychiatric disorder that's, like, marked by really, really big mood changes, really, really big emotions, and oftentimes suicidality, impulsive behaviors that are dangerous, self-harm, right? So, you know, this treatment was created for the people who need it the most and has been since 1993, like, normed down to be able to treat, you know, non-suicidal anxiety, depression, eating disorder, substance use, OCD, you know? So it's like been, it's, it now is benefits everyone, but the idea here is, like, you know, if you're in a really dark place where you've been really stuck with something for a long time, it doesn't feel like you can change that.
Mm.
But if somebody is willing to say, I promise you there's a way to feel differently, there's actually a way to experience your pain differently, and I'm going to do it with you. I'm not just going to say, like, okay, here's what you should do. Goodbye, see you next week. And that works for some people. It's just not for everyone.
Yeah.
Then you can change. Like you said, the accountability is huge. The knowing that, like, being able to, like, trust your provider, like, trust your therapist in DBT is really important, because I'm basically saying, like, you might not be able to see a way out of this, like, whether it be loneliness or, you know, self-harm behaviors. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I can see a way out of this, so you just have to lean on me. Like, just trust me. And that's why we're so radically genuine in DBT, because you can't, why is somebody going to do these really hard things or call me at 1 a.m? Like, no one wants to need that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know your provider and you know that they're, like, a real human being, and you're yeah. able to talk about their emotions and your emotions and all that stuff, then, like, just becomes much more natural
yeah
and necessary.
And I get emotional as you share that, because sometimes I think people just need to hear that there is a way
mm-hmm.
out of what you're currently mm-hmm. experiencing, and they just have to have that trust
mm-hmm.
and sometimes we can't have that for ourselves
mm-hmm.
because of the place that we've been in for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone else reassures us of that, it's all we need.
Yeah.
Like, just like a promise. Like,
yeah. Like, I know.
That's it.
Here's how we're going to do it. Here's what it's going to look
yeah.
like. Like, I have a plan. I'm not going to ask you to do anything you can't do, right? Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it's like, I can't do that. I can't face my social anxiety. I can't X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so can't is a fear word. If you have legs and a voice box, you can pretty much, and arms, you can basically do anything, thank God. If your body works, you can do anything. So can't is, I'm afraid of what will happen, or I don't want to know what will happen,
yeah.
right? And so if we can get through can't and we can identify, I don't want to, I'm afraid to, that makes me feel embarrassed to, we can handle that. I'm going to make a plan for you for that. All I need you to do is try to do 50% of it.
Yeah.
That's it. 30%. I'll take anything, right? To build that trust and to build the capacity to see that you as an individual actually have so much more control over your own self
yeah.
than you realize. And that's really what builds, in my opinion, happiness. The capacity to know that whatever comes your way, you will handle,
mm-hmm.
like, it will not break you. That is happiness. And there's joy, which is, like, you know, woo, joy. But the idea that you can go through your life and like walk through day to day and experience pain and like not enjoy it, but also and also handle it, like that's a life worth living, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yeah, activating that power within mm-hmm. after we feel like we've lost it, possibly. Totally.
Or we felt like we never had it.
Yeah. I've heard you speak about and could versus but and should.
Yes.
And I love it. I actually heard the and part when I used to be an elementary school teacher and I went to school for administration and the administrator started talking a lot about this and instead of but. Uh-huh. Because when you're talking, if you're an administrator and you're talking to a teacher and you say but, it's like I just shut down whatever you just said. Like right. I'm disagreeing with you. Yeah. And I love how you talk about it because there's this other aspect that I think about right now in our world where there are so many more truths.
Yes.
And they all can exist.
Yes.
And I just want you to share a bit on that.
Sure. I first of all, I really appreciate that you like pay attention to that, like that you notice that. And I also really, really, really appreciate as somebody who, like I said, you've had an internet presence since before COVID and like I think when an influencer world really, really blew up, you know, you were kind of around before, at least to me you were. To be able to acknowledge that it's not just black and white.
Yeah.
It's not so binary. Mm-hmm. And that there's so much out there that makes it seem binary. And that's not reality. Reality is that there are a bajillion different truths and no one truth outweighs the other truth. Yeah. And so that's to speak to your point. That's why we say and. Because like you said, but just negates everything that you said before. Yes. It's like, listen, I'm so sorry, but
like, no, you're not sorry.
Why did you? Then don't bother to say sorry. Like, right. If you're actually not sorry, then don't bother to say sorry. Be aware of what you're saying, you know? And so if you can say and, you are training yourself, like thinking is a behavior, talking is a behavior, okay, in my world. And so if you can notice yourself about to say but and you can say and, you are building that muscle. You are literally training yourself to acknowledge that what you're about to say is no more important, true, whatever, than the person that you're talking to that you may or may not agree with. And being able to acknowledge that two truths occur at the same time does not mean that you don't have a side or that you're giving up on your values. It just means that there are other, like, that somebody else thinks differently than you. And, like, they don't need to think the same way as you in order for you to say that's the way they think.
Yeah.
And so and is huge. I was like, there's, like, a joke between my friends and I that's, like, my tombstone's going to say Dr. Maddie Ellberger and just because like I say it all the time. And if you're like one of my friends, like you are just, I am like the word tyrant. I'm like, no, and I'll use a mindfulness bell and I'll like ding it and my patients will know that's when they need to like switch their speech. So should and could on that same line. And again, you'll see when I say this again, how much DBT ties into mindfulness and mindfulness is just the foundation of DBT. So similar to mindfulness, we are extremely aware of judgments and what judgments do to our emotions and what judgments do to our thoughts and therefore our behaviors, right? And so when we are, we define judgments in DBT is really kind of like anything that's not descriptive. Like a judgment, it could be a positive thing, it could be a negative thing, but it's really more of like instead of saying like that chair is ugly, like I would want to say, I don't like that chair because I don't like the color black or like whatever. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because that gives you information. It slows you down and it's not going to take your emotions and hijack them. So what does that have to do with should? Should implies that there is only one right way to do things. Should implies that if you do this not this way, that it's wrong or you won't reach your goal or that it's bad. And that ultimately is a judgment. Because it's not up to any of us to determine how many right ways there are to get somewhere. Just because we want something to be a certain way doesn't mean that it needs to be that way or that we can't get to the top of the mountain through other directions. And so when we should on ourselves, I had a supervisor that said that
once. I always say that. Yeah. I would always say like we're shoulding all over ourselves.
Yep. Literally. And like it all it's doing is keeping you stuck.
Yeah.
It's keeping you either in a shame cycle, it's keeping you afraid, it's preventing you from problem solving, right? It's like the mortal enemy of being able to think outside the box. So we say could because there are a lot of different things we can do, including, by the way, the ineffective thing. You could do that. You might not like the consequences. It doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means that it wasn't the most effective choice for you in that moment.
Yeah.
So it's all about more than one way of thinking, more than one way of doing things, not black and white, not extreme, and not all or nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the could after you share it side by side, the could is just so much more expansive. Mm-hmm. And it's like when we're shooting on ourselves, where we have this ideal, mm-hmm. and we're thinking that something is ideal, mm-hmm. or better or the best. Mm-hmm. And then when we say we could, it's just like it takes the pressure or the judgment off. And yeah. It's like, oh, well, I could do that.
Yeah.
But what's best going to serve me right now?
Right. Or, you know, I did it this way. That's the way I did it in that moment. Yeah. What could I do now?
Yeah.
It gives you options, right? And in life, that's really, again, regardless of what we're struggling with, I feel that what we need in life is options. We need to know that we can do X, Y, or Z. Yeah. And those three things will give us different results, but those are still within our control. Mm-hmm. Nothing is predetermined, you know?
What you just reminded me of through your little bell with your patients is how important what we say, our words, mm-hmm. are. Mm-hmm. And I believe that at first, and I speak a little bit more woo-woo, so I want
woo-woo.
You to back me up.
Go
here.
I absolutely love a woo-woo
I
moment.
Just think if we're not on the frequency of it, we start changing our words and we're just like doing it because our doctor's dinging it and
totally.
Telling us to.
1,000%.
But then something changes. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that process?
1,000%. I love that you're bringing up all these. This is so fun. I don't know that I've ever talked to somebody like on air who understands these things from a different like location, if you yeah. will, but like you get it. It's so much like, I'm like, oh my God, you're so DBT aligned. Like you're so DBT coded. Like, yeah. So interestingly, We can change behavior without motivation when we repetitively do something different and the consequences to not doing it are aversive, okay? And so a lot of time, like, yeah, your therapist will be dinging the bell. It's like Pavlov's. And I'm not like, you know, dinging a bell all of a sudden. That would be insane and like offensive. But, you know, it's all done with trust and
yes,
you know, kind of
course.
Like, can you correct that? But the idea is like one day the muscle, you like feel the muscle, right?
Yes.
It's kind of like, I don't know if you run and I don't, but I train myself.
I have before.
I trained myself to run like for a half marathon last year. It was the hardest thing I ever did in my entire life. I wanted to show myself, like, I have asthma, I have arthritis, like, not for me. Nice Jewish girl, not a runner. Like, absolutely not a runner. So I, you know, and it's kind of like running where it's like eventually like those 3 miles don't become like the hardest thing anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's like you just become so much more aware of like the context of what you're about to say that you know that the way to say it, there's a way to say it and there's a way to say it.
Yes.
And it's really, and like it just, it doesn't even matter should, could, and whatever. Like it's anything that's coming out of your mouth. Like the idea of what it means to really think before you speak is like a lost art.
Yeah.
For all of us.
And there we go again with just being mindful,
mm-hmm.
and bringing our energy to that,
yep.
to what it is right here and right now.
Why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I saying what I'm saying? What am I hoping to get out of this? What can I actually know? Like, what can I control?
Yeah.
Right? Can I make decisions from an informed place? An informed place needs to be, like, it starts with mindfulness. What's my urge? What are my body sensations? What are the thoughts that I'm noticing float around in my head? How does that equate to an emotion? If I do the thing that my urge is pulling me towards, am I going to guarantee a result that I want? The answer is always no. You can never guarantee someone else doing something or whatever it is. So why am I doing what I'm doing? Do I want to accept those consequences? I need to be able to pause and zero in before I do anything. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you're just, like I said, flying on auto. And that's ultimately painful and harmful.
Yeah. So in the beginning of our conversation, you shared this is how you live your life.
Mm-hmm.
Can you take us through like any moments that
oh my
you
God.
Feel comfortable sharing or just how you implement this in your everyday?
1,000,000%.
Because I want to. I want to do more of it.
No, 1,000%. Like it's so funny. My mentor, like one of the first things that she said to me, I remember I like walked into my first supervision when you're a therapist, psychologist, you have like after you finish school, you're supervised, like you meet weekly with a supervisor, like a licensed, experienced clinician, mm-hmm. to discuss cases, obviously to make sure you're basically not like fucking it up. So, like, and like, you know, really what's coming up for you, like what's your stuff that's potentially getting in the way. And I came in, it was my first or second time meeting with her, you know, right after I finished grad school. And I was like, yeah, so like, I don't really know what to do here to do like adhere in DBT. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, what? And she's, I'm like, you know, like the right steps, like what should I be doing? And she was like, no, you have to live this treatment to actually be able to offer it to people. Similar to, you can't lead a mindfulness practice genuinely without practicing mindfulness.
Yeah.
I'm also like trained and certified in mindfulness-based stress reduction. So I can speak to like, you know, very Buddhist mindfulness, and I can speak to more cognitive mindfulness that we see in DBT. And so when I learned that the only person that I, like when I understood why I came in and I was like, I need to show her that I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I got humbled really fast. And then I was like, okay, well now I have to self-reflect and figure out like what's coming up for me and how I can actually implement this stuff in my life and become more aware and mindful so that I can be the best therapist to this person in the room. Because if I don't know what's happening to me in the room, then I definitely can't be helpful to them, you know? And so there's a million things that we can do that like look like DBT in the wild. I would say like for me, one of the biggest things that I take away from DBT is like, again, this pause of like mm-hmm. distress tolerance, where it's like, I don't need to do the thing that I feel like I need to do right now. There's no 5-alarm fire. Like, can I pause? Can I ask myself, why do I want to do this? And what are the potential consequences? That's basically accessing what we call our wise mind. And then really practicing redirecting my attention. And it's not like I need this every day, but like, I know I'm a person, I am a very sensitive person. I have a very, very big emotions. I know that about myself. Like, that's also why I think I'm well suited to this treatment, because I get it, like, to a certain extent. And something that is kind of like become a bit like with my patients or on my Instagram or anyone who knows me, but like something that I utilize when I need to redirect, like when I know that engaging with whatever I'm gonna, like whatever I feel like I want to engage with is not gonna be effective. So I like really am fascinated by World War II. Like, it's just who I am. And I can tell you, like, the last time I went through a horrible breakup, like several years ago, I watched HBO's Band of Brothers, which is about Easy Company paratroopers in World War II. I read every World War II book there was because I needed to practice bringing my mind to something else, and that was the most easily accessible thing. So I'll say all the time, like, oh my God, the other day I found an FDR like documentary that I had never seen before, and I was like, this is great. Like, I'm gonna save this in my Netflix for when I need to redirect myself, when I need a minute. You know, I can put this on for 15 minutes in between my patients if I just need to kind of say, okay, one, two, what's next? So I'm a big pull on what you can in the moment, whether that be, well, like find something that you're drawn to that, and oftentimes it's tends to be like emotionally evocative stuff. It's just that it's a different type of emotion, right? I'm not feeling sad or lonely. Those are usually my triggers, right? Shame around, you know, being single or why doesn't anyone like me? That's my stuff, right? But I can feel a lot when I'm watching this World War II stuff or I'm engaging with it. It's just not the thing that's triggering me. And so I will do that a lot. Another thing that I'm really mindful of is and could, and it like drives other people nuts, that, and at the same time it's effective. And I'm also really I'm very mindful of a lot of interpersonal effectiveness, which is my favorite module in DBT, the set of skills that helps us create the version of ourselves in relationships that is fulfilling, right? So whether that be like, you know, reducing our tendency to people please, or reducing our tendency to cut people out, or being able to ask for what we want or what we need without fear or shame getting in the way. I think these sets of skills are incredible. Like, and you, like, if once you learn them, they kind of like just become a thing for you. Like, oh, I'm using a Dear Man, it's an acronym. I'm using the FAST skill right now, it's an acronym. But like, I am really intentional with the way that I speak to people. And like, I sometimes it's a detriment to me because I have to remember that not everyone's going to speak to me the same way. Mm-hmm. But I'm really, really intentional about making sure that I'm being effective in my interactions. And if I can't be effective in that moment, I will do my very best to pull myself out. So this is like kind of what I do. But if you want to start your day with a mindfulness practice, go off. I just know that I'm not going to at this point in my life. Like, it's again, it's really just, it's mindful. It comes back down to mindfulness. What's going to be hard in my day? How can I plan for that? How can I see what that looks like successfully? We call that coping ahead. Yeah. It's visualization, right? There's so many things that you're already doing, and it's bringing intentionality to that and realizing that like you can use those things on purpose, even at other times. That is really how you live in like a DBT way.
I love that so much.
Thank you.
And I hope those who are listening, if they feel they need the support to create that list,
yep,
and just have it with them,
mm-hmm,
and be able to call on it whenever they may need it, or yep, hopefully if they feel guided to share this conversation with a loved one who may really benefit from this.
Absolutely.
Because I just feel like we all know someone, whether it's us personally dealing with something or a close loved one, that can just use the support or be open to a new type of strategy that can
always
help us get to more of who we really want to be and deserve to be.
Always, right? And that, yeah, that goes for change and acceptance, right? Yeah. Understanding the things that we can't change and how being able to radically accept those things then actually opens doors for more change.
Yes.
And so whatever it might be, like, we all are, everyone's going through something at some time. And in DBT, it doesn't matter how big or small that is. Big or small are judgments. It doesn't matter. Yeah. What you're dealing with is your stuff, and that's your stuff. And so if you can also be in a place where you can recognize that and be the version of yourself that you want to be, and that doesn't have to be the best version of yourself, but the intentional version of yourself, then yeah, you can share this with other people too.
Yeah.
And that can be like you're stuck in traffic, or that can be like you, God forbid, suffered a really bad loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's for everyone.
Where can everyone find you so they can learn more?
So you can find me on my really choogy Instagram handle. It's millennialmindfulnessdoc, D-O-C.
I love it.
Thank you. I mean, like, I'm a millennial. What do you
think? I love it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And you can always reach out to my private practice. It's Downtown Behavioral Wellness. We are accepting new patients. We have several new clinicians that are coming on board. We are hiring. So if you want to reach out to us, my email address is in the bio of my Instagram, but it's contact@downtownbehavioralwellness.com. And you're always welcome to search our website, www.downtownbehavioralwellness.com. And I will be starting a podcast with my best friend that Erica, you will be coming on, called Are We Okay? Okay. It's going to be fun. It's going to be great. So stay tuned for that as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming.
Oh my God, please.
Thank you.
You're the best.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode. I kept thinking about our act instead of react meditation, and so much of the things that we talk about here and use here, I feel like, is reflected in this approach, plus so much more that Maddie offered us. And if you feel guided to share this episode with anyone that can use it, if you feel guided to make your list of 10 things that could assist you through those troubling times or those distressed times, I know that I'm going to have it in my phone and be able to call upon it when I need it. So I hope this was helpful to you. Thank you so much for being here, and I can't wait to see you next time.